Hello, strong, feisty women. Some of you may recognize my voice. I'm Celine Yeager, host of the Hit Play Not Pause podcast. Throughout my career as a professional health and fitness writer and now a podcaster, I hear countless questions from women who are trying to understand how their ever-changing hormones impact their sports performance. So we decided to serve up some answers in a brand new series called Hormonal that we will be releasing on the Feisty Women's Performance Podcast feed. Throughout this four-part series, reproductive endocrinologist Dr. Carla DiGirolamo and I will be tackling topics like periods, the pill, pregnancy, and conditions like PCOS, all from the perspective of sports performance. If you aren't already, follow the Feisty Women's Performance Podcast and stay tuned for our first episode releasing on April 15th. Also, have questions you want answered? Send us a voice note at speakpipe.com/hormonal and we'll get it answered on the show.
Welcome to All Bodies on Bikes, the podcast, where all bodies are good bodies, all bikes are good bikes, and all rides should be celebrated.
All Bodies on Bikes is a movement to create and foster a size-inclusive bike community. So join your hosts. I'm Maggie.
And I'm Marley.
As we explore the complexities of the biking world, help us break down barriers and create the world that we want to see. And don't forget that All Bodies really means all bodies, not just larger bodies, but bodies of all sizes, ages, races, abilities, genders, sexualities, and beyond.
Come along for the ride. Hello, and welcome back to the All Bodies on Bikes podcast. I am super excited for today's guest, and it's just me today. Maggie is currently at work. Well, I guess I'm at work too, but different kinds of work. So today's guest I discovered on Instagram and have been following their work for quite a while now, and they just had like a massive victory, which we're going to get into in the conversation. But I slid into their DMs and said, hey, do you want to come on the show? And it's been great. Mutual fanning over each other for the last 5 minutes. So without further ado, I'm so excited to introduce you all to Sebastian Sutherland. Sebastian Sutherland, they, them, is a cyclist, consultant, community activist, and drag king originally from Scotland, based in Amsterdam in the Netherlands. They've been cycling for over 10 years and advocate for better representation, diversity, and access in cycling. They believe getting on a bike can change people's lives for the better and that everyone should feel welcome to cycling and be a cyclist. Sebastian is an active member in their local community, and they have been the founder of new initiatives that push change locally and further. They founded one of the first LGBTQIA plus cycling clubs in the Netherlands, Queer Wheels, which we'll talk about. They run one of the largest pride rides in Europe, and they're also an inclusion consultant and actively support brands, local sports organizations, and events to educate, guide, and create frameworks which support more people in cycling. They strongly identify with All Bodies on Bikes and believe there is still a lot to do in cycling for equity in the industry. They believe that now is the time for cycling to create change and to grow. Welcome to the show, Sebastian.
Hey. Feels so weird to hear that back.
It's always such a surreal thing. Like, yeah. I get asked for bios all the time, and I have a bio now that I give. And even still, it's like such a weird thing. But you're doing some incredible work.
Thanks. Yeah, I was, well, I, like we said, I am a massive, massive fan, and this feels extremely surreal. Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. And you're in Amsterdam, is that correct?
I'm literally sitting in my room in Amsterdam, yeah.
Nice. Amsterdam is one of my favorite places in the world.
Really?
Yeah, I got to, in my previous life in corporate America, I used to get to travel a lot for work.
Really?
Yeah, and so got to go to Amsterdam probably 5 or 6 times. And I'm not going to lie, like the first time I was like, oh, this is cute, but I just stayed in like the tourist area. And then after that, I stayed in Harlem and like took the little ferry over to, is it North Amsterdam?
Yeah, just Noord, yeah.
Yeah, Noord, where there's like all the cool art and cycling and like,
it's
such an incredible place. So you're very lucky to live there.
Yeah, I feel extremely, I feel extremely very privileged to live here. It's a beautiful place to live. And yeah, I mean, I grew up on the west of Scotland, which is, the weather's kind of similar. So it's not as if I'm worried about the weather. And I just think it's beautiful all year. And with the cycling infrastructure and just the quality of life, it's a great place to live.
Yeah, and the cyclocross scene.
Yes, the cyclocross scene is really cool. It's also, I mean, there's a little bit of the cyclocross scene in the UK. It's getting bigger, I think, as a local sport. It feels more accessible than other types of cycling, I think, to some people. But it's massive here in the Netherlands. And the funny thing was when I started doing cyclocross racing, I did a little bit in the UK and I did okay because there wasn't that many people there. But my first race here, I was lapped by children, which is,
Relatable.
yeah, really, yeah. And I think, okay, right, the Dutch and the Belgians are pretty good. So,
Yeah, it's like they're born with a bike under them and it
yeah,
just becomes
literally.
part of them. Yeah.
Yeah,
Well, let's dig into
it's
your work
true.
a little bit. So, as I mentioned in your bio, you started one of the first LGBTQIA plus groups in the Netherlands. Can you talk about, what inspired you to start that, and maybe some of the challenges you faced in that?
Well, a lot of the things I do are born out of my own necessity or my own want, because I want to cycle in a safe space with more people like me. I want to cycle in a space that's more fun, open to other people. And when I first moved here, it's just before Corona, so everything was a bit weird. And then after the couple of quarantines we had here as well, we had a little bit more than other places when things open up, and I was really looking for a queer centered, very inclusive space. There wasn't any, to be honest, or there was, but it was very still focused on particular groups, and they weren't necessarily overtly trans inclusive or inclusive in other ways. So I thought, I'm just going to do it myself.
Yeah.
Which is how it came about. And I did a pride ride in 2021, and way more people turned up than I expected. I don't think there'd ever been a larger pride ride in Amsterdam just during Pride, myself, that I just ran, and everyone was saying we would like to do this more. So that's how Queer Wheels was born, and now it's kind of evolved, and now we have a home at We Are Queer Gym, which is the first queer ally friendly, because it is open to allies, but it's the first queer gym in Amsterdam, the second one in the Netherlands, where it's focused on LGBTQ plus people, which is super cool. It's called We Are Queer.
That is incredible, and we'll definitely include a link to that. You
Yeah.
made me think of something. It seems like allies are often very supportive, and that's how my journey into the queer world started. Was like, yeah, I'm an ally. I think because I was like almost afraid to come
Classic.
out. Yeah,
Yeah,
and
that
part of
was
me
me.
wonders. And obviously, like, there's no answer to this, and I can't. But I think everybody's a little queer inside, and sometimes it just feels
Yeah,
safer to be an ally.
I always think it's why safe spaces are so important for you to be able to have permission to explore.
Yeah. Well said. And I love that you took the ambition and just kind of ran with it. I think there's so many folks who are waiting for permission or waiting for somebody else to start an initiative. So great job on that. How frequently does Queer Wheels ride? What is it a membership-based thing? Tell me about it.
Well, Queer Wheels is, we've changed a little bit. So now we really have a kind of season, which is exciting. So we generally run rides regularly between May and September or October, depending on how global warming is, because it was really warm in October last year. So we kept the rides going for longer. We do rides for all levels, as much as I can. I only have a couple of other ride leaders. It's still quite small at the moment. I was looking for more. And we run rides, I call chill rides and social rides. The chill rides are really focused on having a low barrier to entry, being really chill and designed as the most inclusive space possible, where people, it's really designed for people who would like to get into cycling, if you're in new to grip riding, or who really experience other barriers. Obviously, it's from the community anyway. So I do those a couple of times a month. And then we're going to have more social rides this month where they're a little bit faster for people who have a little bit more experience. And we're going to do a variety of stuff within those on the road, maybe a little bit of gravel. But it's really just helping people to get into cycling, because the barriers that I faced coming into the sport were crazy. And I wasn't out at the time as trans. I was openly queer, but I only really was able to come out the second time, the second cupboard. So I don't believe in the wardrobe, but in my kind of early mid 20s. And, you know, even before that, there was a lot of barriers for me getting into it. And I just want to try and take some of that away, because I don't want anyone to have the same experience that I did and still do, like you obviously experience as well.
Yeah.
So that's what we try to do. But it's really getting people into the sport and showing it's okay if you don't know everything, but we're gonna learn together.
Yeah, that's really, really cool. And I'm sure folks are so grateful for that. And obviously, so this next question, you know, respecting people's privacy is super important. And maybe you've got some personal anecdotes you can share. But do you have any stories from folks who, you know, attend Queer Wheels or that are in your community that highlight the importance of creating these safe spaces within the cycling community?
Yeah, I think I've got so many that it's hard to pinpoint. I'm trying to think of one that would be extra special, but the thing is about Queer Wheels is that we really get a whole bunch of different people that feel so restricted in where they can go and how they can get into cycling. And every week or every time I do it, there's always somebody new who is so frightened and almost didn't show up. And that's the thing, it's that you almost don't even show up because you really don't feel that welcome. And I just think the fact that they've gotten out the door and come there is just the coolest thing ever. And I always say we all know that's the first barrier, right? I think obviously we're going to speak about the race in a bit, but the most recent thing that I think is so important is ahead of the cyclocross race that we're going to discuss, which was the first cyclocross race in the Netherlands to have a non-binary category, one of the first cycling races in the Netherlands, actually the first cycling race in the Netherlands ever to have a non-binary category. Queer Wheels partnered with another group, which I'll shout out to, called No Ordinary Women CC. They're a group for which are women-focused, but also for female-identifying, femme, and also non-binary people, so me, which is nice that was founded in 2020, that I've been around forever. We partnered with them for some workshops before this race because we realized there's going to be a lot of men there, but there's going to be no other kind of more marginalized genders. So we decided, right, let's try and do something to change that. So we did a couple of workshops and there was a great turnout, especially to one. And so many of these people would never have come to this. Sorry, Marley, I'm living with housemates.
It's all right. It's all good.
Right. Hello. So go back. So we decided to run these, Queer Wheels and Ordinary Women decided to run these collaborative workshops together before the race to try and, you know, bring down some barriers. And the turnout was great. And it was just amazing to see people really enjoying themselves and not being so worried about things that exist when you're in these cycling spaces. They didn't have to worry about people getting their pronouns wrong. They didn't have to worry about dressing a specific way. They didn't worry about looking a specific way or being good or being great. Or it was just really fun. We're just jumping on and off and getting muddy. And at the end of the workshop, everybody was so happy. And I just think that's really nice.
That is really so happy. Nice. And, you know, it's, I don't know if funny is the right word, but that's actually how I got into cyclocross as well. You know, I would,
really?
I attended as a spectator for years. Yeah. And then there was a group in Seattle called Breakfast Cycling Club.
I know Breakfast.
And so they started running workshops, you know, before the cyclocross season, just to break down those barriers and teach you how to ride an off camber section, how to mount and dismount, how to carry your bike, like things that, you know, once you've been racing cyclocross for a while, you kind of take it for granted. But if you've never done it, it's like, what am I even doing on this bicycle? And you know,
absolutely.
They just had, so their season ends in like, I think November, December. But at their, like, you know, the hallmark race of the year, they had the largest ever non-binary category ever. And that's, I forget how many people were in it. I'm totally kicking myself.
Yeah, one of my friends, Andy, raced. I met them through Instagram and they were here for, I can't remember why, they were here in the summer in Amsterdam here. And we just connected and they borrowed one of my bikes when we went cycling. It was really, really cute. And I'm such a big fan of breakfast and Andy and everyone. And yeah, and their recent article was really cool. It's so
Yes.
nice that you had that experience with them.
That's so cool. It's funny. I met Andy many years. Actually, it was probably early COVID when they were just getting into cycling. We went to the same
so
bike
cool.
shop. And so it's just, it's incredible to see people's journey as they come into themselves and find a place where they are accepted and welcomed and can fully figure that out. I love the cycling world. It's such a small world.
Yeah, it's growing. I feel that our communities and our way of thinking and being is really growing, which is super nice. And I think one thing I'll say as well from the workshop is, as a result of the workshops that we did, then for the race, loads of those people signed up, which is what we're, I think that obviously, like what breakfast is doing, it's the same, but this proves the point. The fields were still very small compared to the men, but there was five or six more people there than there would have been without them,
Yeah.
which I think makes a whole difference.
It really does. And then, you know, next year you'll build off of the success and continue doing well.
Yeah.
We're already talking about it. Let's talk about this race. You know, tell me about it. Tell me, I know you worked for a long time to get that non-binary category added. How did that come about? Talk to me about that whole process.
Yeah, well, I've been trying to race as me for a long time. Not only that, coming up against a lot of barriers locally in the Netherlands as well. I think people do believe that the Netherlands is a very accepting and welcoming country for LGBTQ plus people. But unfortunately, it is going down on the equality index, and it is not the same place as it potentially was. And I believe that, you know, a lot of people think that with the gay marriage rights coming in, that that was the world problem solved when it came to LGBTQ plus people. But obviously we're now seeing, like everywhere in the world, there's a lot of prejudice, misinformation, and resistance against, for example, trans inclusion and non-binary people. So among many, many other things that have issues to the Netherlands, despite it being a great place to live. Obviously I'm a privilege in a lot of areas that other people aren't. So it's been a long slog. And with the racing, I'd actually been petitioning. This race was organized by Rafa. I work for Rafa Amsterdam in the clubhouse just as a supervisor, but it's a really nice part of my life, which I really enjoy. Rafa Amsterdam did it in collaboration with Mats, which is another local cycling store. I wasn't on the people that were organizing the race, but obviously I was close to it. So I kind of was like, yeah, guys, it's going to be a non-binary category, right? And they were like, yeah, of course, why not? I was like, exactly, that sounds
yes.
good. That's how it should be. So I think there would have been a problem if there had not been, because we all know each other so well and they know my story so well. But prior to this, I actually had to boycott the local cycling league in Amsterdam this year. I've been racing for a few years prior, and I've been asking them, please, can we talk? I'd really love to ask if you would be able to add a non-binary category. I'm here for education to explain why, but they just wouldn't have it. They wouldn't even speak to me. They wouldn't have anything to do with me. And yeah, a couple of years later, I just decided I can't do it again. They're trying to funnel me into one category. And I just said, look, I can't do this anymore. You guys need to get with the program, and I'm officially going to boycott you, because unfortunately nothing else worked, but sometimes putting the pressure on does. But eventually they came around and I had a really, really nice conversation with them. So I'm really excited to work with the Amsterdam cross competition next year. I know that we're still in talks about it, but it's really good that they then did listen and we had a nice conversation. But I didn't know that this race was going to happen, the Mats Rafa one. It was quite random and I kind of expected to not race again for at least another year or 2 years, depending. So it was really amazing. And I was like, oh crap, I need to get on Zwift and get fit, because I would like to win.
Yeah.
And what was quite funny is that obviously with the category coming in, the assumption was that I would probably be the only one. I wasn't in the end, which was awesome. Like I said, it was a locally organized race and it was just such a great day. And with the workshops that were organized with now, Queer Wheels, it just was so, we say in Dutch, gezellig, which is means a cozy time. It was a fun time. It was a beautiful time. And it was just so great. And it still makes me quite emotional, but even just to do sign on and sign my name in a place which feels right,
yeah,
is beyond, I don't have words. Even that small bit at the beginning of the day, which seems so minor and so nothing, it meant so much to me. And also to the other non-binary people that signed up too. It was pretty awesome. And then the race happened. It was hard. It's not an easy course, that one. It's a long one. And I think my heart rate was at 190 for, however many
minutes.
Oh my
gosh.
Yeah, it was a lot of tight corners. And yeah, it was awesome. The race was awesome. And we ran the women's category and the non-binary category at the same time because they had the least amount of people. But everyone was also so encouraging on the field, not just to me, but we're all saying, come on, go faster. Everyone's so encouraging of each other because there's a sense of solidarity that we're all carving out new space for each other, which is so beautiful. And then, I got on the podium and I did my champagne and it was great. And I have it. Yeah.
Oh, that's a beautiful trophy.
It's really nice. Thanks to Sven who got it made. And luckily I get to keep it, which is nice. It takes quite a place on my desk.
But, nice. Yeah. I remember watching your Instagram stories from that day and you had something about when you got to, sign in for the race. And I don't know if it was your stories or actually on your feed, but just that realization that you finally got to race as yourself. I think, a lot of us who are cisgendered take for granted that our identity isn't questioned most of the time. And we do just get to show up fully as ourselves. And so for folks who are non-binary, getting to be yourself, I imagine, feels incredible. So
it really is. I mean, I obviously don't speak on behalf of all non-binary or gender non-conforming or genderqueer people, of course, but it was wild. It's still sinking in, to be honest, Marley. I can't believe it happened. And I just hope the momentum keeps going. I hope that, okay, for selfish reasons, I can keep going to events as myself and be there. But I hope that also it creates a momentum for other people to feel that they can come and do things. And I don't want to win all the time. I want to lose, kind of.
kind of.
My friends would say, maybe that's not true, sir, but I don't want to win all the time. I want other people to come and beat me. And
yeah, you want people to compete against.
Yeah, I want to compete. And that's the other thing as well. But it just means so much to not have to hide. I spent so much of my life pretending I was somebody that I'm not. And that was really hard. And to not have to do that in a sport that I love is amazing.
Yeah. It reminds me of Abby Robbins, who is a non-binary cyclist here in the United States. We had
I'm
them on
such
the show.
A fan.
Yeah. Abby is so
Abby,
incredible.
I love you.
Today's actually Abby's birthday. Happy birthday, Abby.
Is it your birthday? Abby, happy birthday. Felicitations. Yes.
I'll have to text them after this and make sure they
listen.
Yeah,
they're so awesome.
But
yeah,
when
they,
we
they really also, seeing Abby also gave me more permission as well. And that's why it's so, I mean, I was doing the stuff here already, but seeing Abby do their thing made me be more open online because it made me realize, okay, we've kind of, what I felt that it's important to do this. So
yeah,
thank you, Abby.
And I'm sure folks are seeing you and saying, oh, I can do this. I can be myself. And I think about, what you said about how you want people to compete against you and maybe not always win. That's like Abby, the first year at Unbound, they were the only one, Unbound Gravel. And, the next year, I think, I don't know, there were five people. And then, this year there was way more people than could fit on the podium. And they had, I think they had full non-binary podiums for each of the distances. So
yeah.
I would
so
like to
awesome.
Think that that's going to happen where you're at in the Netherlands. It's like, once that door gets open, you can't close it because people do have a right to participate in sport as who they are.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I hope so. And I hope it sends a chain reaction through other places in Europe too.
Yeah. Well, kind of on that note, how can the cycling community at large, whether we're cisgender or queer or non-binary, whatever, how can we be more welcoming and supportive of marginalized groups? And do you have any specific strategies to achieve this or tips or hints?
Speak to people from those groups. I can't stress enough how people are not at the table when these discussions are happening about them. Mm-hmm. And there's people who are not marginalized or not from specific groups making decisions about me or other people. You got to speak to people because you'll never know what they want or what the best thing is. And diversity is power. Knowledge is power. And having more voices, more ideas at the table creates a really beautiful, knowledgeable and equitable community.
Yeah. Yeah. Very well said. So, you know, as I was researching you, I always kind of feel like a creep because it's like, I'm creeping on your Instagram, I'm Googling you.
I creep on you all the time, Marley, in the most fan-personing way.
Exactly. But, you know, one thing that I saw is, you know, your hope is to help other folks become, you know, quote unquote, serious cyclists or, you know, just folks who are really involved and passionate about that. You know, you've talked a little bit about, you know, the barriers, but what advice do you have for folks who, you know, might be facing those barriers or who are, you know, in marginalized communities to feel more welcome in the sport or to become more involved?
It's a really good question. I think back to the idea of what is a cyclist or what is a serious cyclist. To me, the idea of what a cyclist is has changed and is continually changing because more people are claiming that in a good way, in a really positive way, because being a cyclist isn't doing the Tour de France anymore. It isn't knowing everything about every single pro cyclist anymore. It isn't riding on the road. It isn't necessarily doing 100K. It isn't riding and, you know, suffering. The idea of being a cyclist is so open, and you decide yourself if you're a cyclist. And I guess I feel weird like giving tips because I just think people should do their thing. But the advice is do your thing and you're valid and you're welcome. And if you decide that you're a cyclist, it can be in any way. That could be commuting, doing gravel, going to see your granny, whatever. You're a cyclist. And that's, yeah, we cycle for lots of different reasons in lots of different ways. And if you are passionate about pedaling in whatever form that is, then you're a cyclist.
Yeah.
And have the confidence to claim that space because you're valid.
I love that. I love that so much. And, you know, I would add on to that, you know, find groups to ride with, find folks that resonate with you. And if you don't find that, start your own. That's how All Bodies on Bike started.
Make it. Yeah. Build, make, be. It's really, that's actually the Project Fearless motto, I think, which is a really nice, I quoted my friend's nonprofit. My friend Merida, she's excellent. She runs a really amazing nonprofit here called Project Fearless, and it's focused on young girls and gender fluid youth. And the idea is all about empowerment and confidence. And they do lots of different things, but I believe their motto is build, make, be. And I think that also resonates with so many things. And yeah, find other people that feel the same way. There are groups that are there now. There wasn't before, which is true, but yeah, just do it.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I love that. You're like giving me confidence. Like, I know I've like got this space, but even now, sometimes there's times when I don't feel welcome or I don't feel like there's a space for me. And it's like, no, there is a space and there are other folks who are feeling this way.
Yeah, me too. Sometimes I just feel, you know, you feel a bit imposter syndrome, right? Not only about your own work, but about being in the industry because it's so dominated by people that don't look like you or don't have the same ideas as you. But there are nice spaces that exist that are thinking differently about it. And yeah, who says this is what a cyclist is? You say you're a cyclist.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. To me, if you're riding a bike, you're a cyclist. If you want to identify that way.
Yeah. Also, you can identify any way you like.
Exactly. Well, kind of on that same note, you know, talking about, you know, the cycling community at large or mainstream cycling organizations, you know, what role do you see them playing in promoting diversity and inclusion? And then, you know, what steps can they take to be more proactive? You know, you mentioned inviting people to the table, but beyond that, you know, what else needs to happen?
In my experience, brands and large organizations have a responsibility to do the right thing. and they need to do much better. There is not enough authentic, enthusiastic investment in the subject within the industry. And we need to get with the program, otherwise cycling is not going to be moving forward into the future in a way that is keeping it alive.
Yeah.
That's what I think. And yeah, they need to be doing better. They need to be, yes, inviting people, but they need to have, equity, inclusion and diversity at one of the core pillars of their business. They need to make sure that they're hiring people properly, talking to people, and like I said, authentically engaging with content and ideas and communities and people who know what they're talking about to help guide them. And they should be taking a stance. They should be doing something. We can't just be afraid of social media or things, because at the end of the day, people are always worried about whether they're a good person or not. I think that's why we are always worried about what we're doing in life, whether we're on the right side of whatever this is or history. But I always think, think about your gut, and yeah, if you really want to do the right thing, then you need to do it. You need to stick by what you said you were going to do 5, 6, 3 years ago. A lot of people are bringing out impact goals and goals within the companies or organizations, and don't just say it, you need to do it.
Yeah.
And that involves, yeah, like I said, speaking to the right people, hiring people, being actually invested in what you're saying, or don't. And if you don't, you also got to stick by that, because there's no point being half-assed about it.
Amen. Yeah. It's unfortunate. It felt like, after the summer of 2020, there was so much momentum in this space, and it feels like
very hopeful.
I also felt very hopeful, and it feels like, as the economic tides have turned, people aren't buying the same number of bikes that they were during COVID for very obvious reasons. A lot of the effort towards diversity and equity and inclusion and representation has gone that same direction. And I think it's a really big misstep by these brands, because that's who is continuing to come into the sport, or continuing to get into riding bikes. And we want to see ourselves represented and see diverse faces and voices and stories.
I fully agree. And I do think it's a shame, because it's proven as a business case that investing in this is good for companies. It's good in the long run for economically to invest in this. It's been proven. So why not?
Yeah. If Maggie
if you're
was
frightened
here,
or yeah, and if you're frightened, it's because you don't know enough, so you need to educate yourself. So
exactly, yeah. If Maggie was here, they would say stupid is loud, and I think a lot of companies are afraid of those loud voices. But those are often, the minority of what people are actually thinking. But they're stupid and they're loud. But yeah, they get a lot of attention.
Yeah, it is unfortunate. I mean, obviously, you yourself will really understand the tidal wave of discrimination online, and those voices are very, very loud. But if you actually look into it, they're all just bots or fakeness or people who are just trying to stoke hate, which is unfortunate.
Yep.
But if more brands took the time to actually speak to us and have a look at what's actually happening, they'll realize that it's not as scary as you think. And it's only scary because you don't know how to handle it, because you haven't done the time to educate yourself. But I hope that in the future that this will be better and that people will invest in it, because it's good for the companies.
Yeah. Well, that ties in really beautifully to my next question, which is, looking ahead, what are your hopes and aspirations for the future of queer representation and participation in cycling, both in the Netherlands and globally?
Well, I want to have a nice world where everyone's nice to each other. I think that's like the underlying thing that everybody wants, right? But obviously that's a bit of a pipeline dream. It's funny because people ask me this question, what do I want for the future? And to be honest, I'm still planning my schedule for Queer Worlds like next month.
Yeah.
And it's these two things where, we, yourself included, we're the people on the ground actually making change and doing things. And we're really working ourselves incredibly hard to do these things. And I would like to see it come into fruition, and I would like to see, like we were talking about, better investment in people and listening, and a world where things aren't ruled by assumptions, where things aren't ruled by, misinformation, lack of education, where people are listened to, accepted, and treated as equally as possible. And the thing is about equity is that everybody needs something different to get to the table. Not everybody, if you give everyone a bike, not everybody's going to be able to ride it. You need to figure out, does this person need a different type of bike? Has this person, do they even know how to ride a bike? And I think getting to a stage where we're actively thinking about that, and that it's not just an afterthought, that it's within the first thoughts of what we're doing as people, as cyclists, as brand ambassadors, as brands, as companies, that's where I want it to go. I want it to be one of the first thoughts, not an afterthought. And I would like to see more investment in us as, when I say real cyclists, I mean people who like to ride their bikes, not real cyclists as in like the pros, because the pros, while I love racing and I have a lot of respect for pro cyclists, they don't make up a large proportion of the population of cyclists in the world. We do. And we should be listened to more. And
Amen.
I'd like Career Wheels to grow. I'd like to keep going with Career Wheels, and I'd like it to grow, but in a way that feels nice and organic.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like I mean, that is so admirable, and like I just your heart feels so pure to me. I want to talk, selfishly a little bit. Obviously you are a very talented rider and you train and all that. Do you have any, goals to become pro, or where would you like your cycling career to go?
Oh my God, I've never. That's so funny. Someone else asked me this recently, and I was like, "Me going pro? Good one." But because there's representation matters. If you can't see it, you don't think you can be it. I would love to race at a national. I would love to have the opportunity to race at a national event that includes non-binary people, to be taken seriously as a cyclist. I think a lot of us, we're talking about claiming space and being taken seriously as somebody who genuinely loves the sport and is a real cycling enthusiast and knows about stuff. I quite often feel, and I know that, also shout out to my friend Federico. He's a really talented photographer and queer cyclist as well. He also races for a gravel team in Italy. We met a few years ago on Instagram, and I rode with him in Italy in the summer, and it was the first ride after I had my top surgery. And we were talking about how we're not taken seriously as queer people in cycling, because people are like, what? They don't think that these things go together. Or if
Yeah.
you're anybody from a marginalized group or look different than a typical cyclist, then people just don't take you seriously. My goal is to be taken seriously. Long story short, I would love to do more racing and get into that. My career as a cyclist, I think just do cool shit. I'd
I
love to
love that
do the
goal.
Taiwan Com. That would be really cool, but that's like a super privileged thing to be able to do, the Taiwan Com. It's the longest climb in the world in Taiwan. I'd love to do that.
How
Anybody
long
who
is
wants to
it?
find me, I can't remember off the top of my head, but it's like the biggest mountain climb in the world. But I'd love to just go to more events. I'd love to meet you in person, Marley. That's on my bucket list,
Let's make it
literally.
happen.
Just so you know, I just want to meet more people and just keep this thing going. That's my professional goal. And to be, I mean, selfish, like I'd love to race and be at the forefront of this different movement. But I think I just want this to last. I want this to have a legacy, not just for myself, but I want this to be ingrained in the DNA of the cycling culture and local cycling scene. Sorry, that was very long. But
No.
there are my professional goals, I think, just to make it better
Yeah,
and
no
to
need to
leave it
apologize.
better.
Yeah, dream big. And I think, by speaking it out into the world, I hope that people hear you and hear your story and think, yeah, I want to support Sebastian. I want to bring them onto the team or whatever that might look like. So I guess speaking of that, are there any sponsors you want to shout out?
Yeah, I have some sponsors I'd like to share. Firstly, I'm pro. They do support me so much. They're an amazing brand, and I actually just kind of I met someone at a photo shoot that I was doing that used to work for them, and they put me in and they just asked me about my story. Everybody on that shoot, nobody had ever met a non-binary person, so I was quite new. And we were on the photo shoot, and we were having a call at 4 a.m. But the weather ended up being too bad, so we were all like, okay, what are we going to do, twiddling our thumbs at 4 a.m. So we just all started having these really deep chats, and I just shared my story. And I just started HRT, so I was really excited and I want to share it, but people are like, yeah, but it was really nice. And then they were like, we've got this community program, you should. And then, yeah, that's how it happened. And Pro have been really supportive of me in difficult times, but also hopefully onto some really cool times, because I'm still very new to the social media game and the ambassador influencer game. I don't know. I'm what I'm best at is the stuff on the ground, and that's obviously why they support me. I also want to shout out Shimano, Benelux. They're super nice guys, really nice people as well. Also loads of nice ambassadors, and they really also believe in the mission of, you know, getting more people out on bikes in the world. And I love that about Shimano. It feels really pure and really nice. We're just saying something because, yeah, quite a lot of these cycling brands you're not sure about, but I really believe in their mission and it really feels aligned to me. And obviously I work for Rafa, but Rafa's cool and it's changed a lot. I'll fully admit I wasn't always a big fan of Rafa.
Yeah, I'm currently not a big fan of Rafa because they don't make my size.
They don't. We're not size inclusive. Absolutely not size inclusive. We're well aware. I say we as if I represent Rafa. I don't, by the way. I don't represent Rafa. I don't speak for Rafa, just so everyone knows.
Yeah, crossing the T's, dotting the I's.
Yeah, yeah. We're not size inclusive, but it is something that we are working on. And I actually worked at the head office a couple of years on secondment a few years ago, and it's being talked about and in the pipeline. Being discussed, I know. And I think, the brand is doing a lot internally to learn. And I think sometimes when you're doing a lot internally, people can't see it, which is really tricky. So these conversations are being had. I think that's really important. And Rafa is doing, can always do more. Everyone can always do more. But I think, brands like Rafa, again, using their voice for good is really cool. And I hope to see more of that in the future with Rafa. And then the last, I'm trying to think if I have anyone else I need to shout out. We Are Queer Gym. It's awesome. Obviously, they support me a lot. And Ramwork, which is actually a new sponsor of mine, my frame sponsor. They're really cool guys from Harlem, which you know about. Obviously, it's a town.
I love Harlem. It's like,
Harlem is a town, not Harlem, New York, Harlem, Netherlands. It's a town just west of Amsterdam, and they're just a really small brand, but they're really nice guys and they're growing and I'm growing, so we're just going to grow together, and they really support the mission. So
that's so awesome. Yeah,
I'm just thankful for all the support, because honestly, this is really hard. And I also understand that I'm an extremely privileged person. I already worked in the industry before I've only been working for Rafa for 3 and almost 4 years. But I've been doing, the cycling stuff, trying to do this for a long time. And I'm really privileged, but it still takes a lot of work. I would not be able to afford it. I cannot afford it if it wasn't for these supporters, and all these people wouldn't enjoy riding if it wasn't for all of them as well supporting me to do this. So thank you.
I'm honestly in the exact same boat, and it's kind of cool because I also work with both Pro and Shimano. So shout out to both of those brands for, you know, supporting different people than your typical pro cyclist. Thank you for that support. And I do appreciate the nuance of the conversation about Rafa. You know, it's one of those things where I just want people to have the choice, you know, to have a choice in clothing. That way you can actually wear what reflects your personal style.
Absolutely.
Where, you know, so often for plus size folks, and I'm going through this right now of like, do I even have a personal style, or am I just wearing what has been available to me?
Yeah. So, I mean, I can't imagine how that must be. But I really agree with the sentiment of personal style, because if we're talking about, you can claim the space to be a cyclist, you also need that represented in the stuff you wear and the stuff you need. And it's absolutely needed and essential. I think it's a really important conversation. I mean, totally different, but as somebody who's gender nonconforming, everything's gendered. So it's also really tough. And obviously with Queer Wheels, what I also do is I do a lot of advisory, and sometimes I say, okay, everyone come in to Rafa at 2 p.m. on Sunday, and we can all have a look through stuff together. And I can explain things in a less gendered way. And Rafa's really supportive of stuff like that as well. It doesn't need to be a big event. Doesn't need to be a pride thing. It's just people coming in and learning about stuff. But I would love to see more gender neutral or different way of talking about things. And I hope including that, also including more inclusive sizing, yeah, and more representation across the board. Hopefully Rafa can work towards that.
Yeah, very cool. Well, thanks for fighting the good fight. So last question before our final two wrap-up questions.
Where it's going too fast.
I know. I could talk to you all day. Where can people find you and follow along with your work?
People can find me in Amsterdam, but they can also find me. Also, I do go back to Scotland sometimes. I'm from Glasgow originally. I miss it. You can find me on Instagram. I'm sure Marley will link all my links.
Yes.
You can also find me on LinkedIn for the professional stuff. I also linked my consultancy stuff there as well. Queer Wheels is also on Instagram. It's just queer_wheels. I didn't send you that link, but I will.
You did, but we'll include it.
Okay, great. Queer Wheels, and yeah, I'm also a drag king. You can follow my drag account if you like. It's actually a job, which is great.
I love drag kings. Like, I love drag queens, but they're like, and I hope people don't get mad at me, they're like a dime a dozen. Drag kings, I feel like you have to work so much harder at what you do.
Yeah, there's a lot of misogyny within, and also like trans misogyny within the community, but it's getting better. And there's a really cool collective called the Lost Boys, which is a drag collective in Amsterdam. They won the Amsterdam Super Bowl last year, which is really cool. I'm not part of them or associated with them, but that's like a really good example of more kings getting more representation. And I feel really lucky to be supported by a lot of queer nights here and people, and given lots of cool opportunities. I'm hoping to perform at Milkshake this year, which is a big queer-centered, it's not like overtly queer, but it is queer-centered music festival that we have in Amsterdam every summer. But yeah, drag kings, we do fight quite hard. It's really tricky to get a space because people assume that we're not good, but we're so good.
Yeah, I love drag kings.
We can dance, we can act, we can be silly. Yeah, we're a good time.
Agreed. Well, I'm totally going to creep on your drag king account too.
Yeah, it's Hamish Hunky Dory is my stage name.
Say it one more time.
Hamish Hunky Dory.
Hamish Hunky Dory. Ooh, okay. We will have links to all of that. And yeah. I'm also going to look up the Lost Boys.
Yeah.
Okay, so we have two final questions that we ask every guest. Yeah. The first one is like, what is your perfect day outside or on a bike? What does that look like for you?
So from start to finish, get up, have my porridge. I love porridge. It's very typical Scottish, but I love
say that's
porridge.
Very Scottish of you.
Very Scottish. Love my porridge, but I will have like, you know, blueberries and fruit and stuff, make it fancy. To be honest, sometimes I love riding with people, don't get me wrong, but I really like a lot of space, and actually it's planning a ride on my own. Grabbing my probably either my road or gravel bike, I don't mind, but just setting out on an adventure, not worrying about my average speed, going somewhere I've never gone before, or going somewhere that I've been a lot of times. I really like going down to the Lage Verge, which is an area near Amsterdam. It's about like 80 or 100k round trip, and you go down there and there's gravel, and it's just so beautiful, just being in nature. I stop and I have a big lunch in. We eat something called pannekoek here, which is basically like pancake, but you just put whatever you like on it. Have a big old pannekoek, and then cycle home having eaten too much. And you know when your like stomach is focused on digesting and your legs can't work?
Yeah,
that,
you're
having
uncomfortable.
Having that feeling, the lactic acid is like, we're in the wrong place, honey. It's just like, yeah. And if it's, I have to say, I do like warm weather quite often. Obviously, Amsterdam is full of canals and beautiful places. So I like stopping off safely for a bib dip, love having a swim, getting back on, cycling home. And then Probably going for a drink with my friends. That's also in the evening in a park somewhere. That's my ideal day on the bike, just having some mental space, listening to music that I like and thinking about life.
That sounds perfect. And it reminds me of summers that I spent in Amsterdam, riding bikes and having drinks with friends on big park lawns. And it does have so you guys have such a unique park culture, like I guess Europe in general, that just doesn't exist here in the States.
We're lucky because we have a lot of green spaces, and obviously the Netherlands has the best cycling infrastructure in the world, which is really cool. But I think equally, I do also enjoy days riding with the collectives and people I ride with too. There's something really special about that. I still get nervous sometimes going to ride with groups, but once you get over the social anxiety, you're like, oh, this is sick.
I
And
mean,
you feel really warm after.
I still get social anxiety. Like it, especially, and I hope this doesn't happen to you, but as you become more and more well known, it does feel like there's this expectation that people are like wanting to see you, and I get it.
I'm not quite at that level, I think, but I think there's a lot of worries, that I face and that other people face, and social anxiety is still a thing, even if you're somebody that's seemingly quite extroverted. But yeah, and what was your other question? Sorry, I'm not sure
Yeah,
if what.
no, it's okay. So we've talked bikes, we've talked drag kings, we've talked all sorts of things. Is there a topic that you wish more people asked you about or that you got to talk about outside of bikes? And it's okay if
Aliens.
not.
Aliens and
Aliens.
dinosaurs. My special interests are
Tell me more.
I love dinosaurs. I think they're so cool. And aliens, I think the concept of aliens is really great. I would love to talk about like dinosaurs and the earth and things like that. I love science and discussing that as well. I wish more people would talk to me about dinosaurs.
I will talk to you about dinosaurs any day. Do you have a favorite dinosaur?
I kind of really love a triceratops, but if
Okay.
anybody is now I'm getting to that age where it's like I saw a meme the other day that was like, if you see this movie, you need to book an appointment to have your eyes tested because you're that old. And it was The Land Before Time. And I was like,
Yeah.
oh my God, I'm that old. I'm not. I'm 13, mate, and I still think that's incredibly young. But The Land Before Time really inspired me. So I also love the long necks.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, that movie. Actually, there was like 20 of them.
There
So
were so
many.
many. My grandparents had them all on VHS, and I love them. It was really my childhood was Land Before Time and cycling with my granddad.
I love that. I love that. Well, Sebastian, this has been an absolute delight getting to know you, getting to hear your story. And I hope we get to ride bikes sometime together.
I hope so too, Marley. It would be a literal dream come true. Like I
Agreed.
said, it's on my bucket list. But
I'm so
thank
embarrassed
you
and
so
honored at
much.
the same time.
Thank you so much for having me, and thank you so much for the work you do. I think that it's such a thankless task, and I know that it's really hard, and obviously I will never be able to understand from a perspective, but I just think you're so awesome.
Well,
So
thank
thank
you. I
you.
really appreciate it. And thank you for all the work that you do. And thanks for spending the last hour chatting with us. And
No worries. It's been a privilege and a joy.
awesome. Well, this has been another episode of All Bodies on Bikes, and thanks for tuning in.
This is an All Bodies on Bikes podcast powered by Feisty Media. The show is produced by Maggie and Marley and edited by the team at Feisty Media. Thanks for listening.